So let's start with the first verse. So here Arjuna is asking a question. Arjuna Vacha
Arjuna Vacha
Jayasi Chetra Namaste
Jayasi Chetra Namaste
Matta Buddhir Janardana
Matta Buddhir Janardana
Tatkim Karmani Ghore Maam
Tatkim Karmani Ghore Maam
Niyojayasi Keshava
Niyojayasi Keshava
Jayasi Chetra Jayasi is better. If you think that better than karma is buddhi, O Janardana, that better than karma is buddhi, then why are you engaging me in karma? And what to? Ghora karma. Nyo jaisi is engaged. So essentially, we'll look at what the meaning is. But Arjuna is thinking that the karma which I am going to fight the war, that is ghora. And if acting in buddhi is better, then why should I fight? So let's recite the next verse. Then we'll discuss the meaning of Arjuna's question. Yamishrineva vakena
Yamishrineva vakena
Buddhim moyasiva me
Buddhim moyasiva me
Tadekam vada nischitya
Tadekam vada nischitya
Yena shreyoham apnuyam
Yena shreyoham apnuyam
Shreya. So, Yamishra. Mishra means mixed. Yamishra means that is mixed in such a way that it creates illusion. Vakena, your words. But this buddhi moyasi, my intelligence is as if bewildered. Therefore, vada, speak ekam nishchita, speak one word definitely, by which I will get shreya, I will get true benefit. So what is Krishna referring, Arjuna referring to when he is saying the previous verse? He said, say, basically saying, I am confused, you have spoken equivocally, mishra vakya you have spoken. And what is the mishra vakya? For example, somebody says, see, Ayurvedic treatment is better than allopathic treatment, therefore take allopathic treatment. If Ayurvedic treatment is better than allopathic treatment, what should be taken? Ayurvedic, naturally. So, Krishna here said that buddhi is better than karma, and then you tell him to practice karma. So, that makes sense to me. So, he's asking, why, what? So, what is Arjuna meaning by this? So, actually, from Arjuna's point of view, he sees only two options for himself. Either I act or I don't act. And he is thinking that acting means, and then I'll be doing fighting, and that is bad karma. That will cause karmic bondage. And not acting is renouncing the world. And then I'll be acting in buddhi. So Arjuna is seeing only two options over there. And he is thinking that if buddhi is better than karma, so he's equating buddhi with inaction and karma with warfare. Then why is Krishna telling that I should fight? Because obviously, doing something which is involving bad karma should not be done. But although Arjuna is thinking seeing two options, Krishna has actually talked about four levels. So Arjuna is seeing only these two options. He is equating buddhi with inactivity and activity or karma with vikarma, fighting. So Arjuna and Krishna has talked about four levels. What are those four levels? Vikarma is the lowest. That is, fighting a war for sinful activity. A sinful activity. So self-centered warfare. Let us see whether that is sinful. Basically, what Krishna has talked about is, when he talks about Vikarma, he says, if you give up fighting, that is a sinful activity for you. So, Ittvaja, Hitva tata swadharmam kirtincha hitva papam avaksasi. Krishna told him 2.33 that vikarma is the lowest level. That what is sin? To give up fighting because you have to give up kshatriya. Then the one level above that is karma or sukarma. That is doing karma kanda by which you get elevated to heaven. Then above that is karma yoga by which one will get liberation. And above that is jnana yoga, which is renouncing the world and becoming inactive. So, Krishna has not explicitly talked about Jnana Yoga in the previous chapter. But that is the option that is in the background of Arjuna's mind. What is there? We say that Shreyo Bhoktum Bhiksha Api Haloke. It's better that I take Bhiksha and live. That is basically living like a renunciate. So, Krishna has talked about four levels, where Arjuna has understood only two levels. And now, Krishna when talking about these four levels, what the level of Jnana Yoga, which is renouncing action, all three are having action. All other three are having action. And Nishkam Karma Yoga has action to lead to Mukti. Karma Kanda has action to lead to Swarga. And Vikarma has action to lead to Narakam. Niyake Narakam Vasa, as Arjuna told. Niyate Narakam. So now, what has happened? So here Arjuna is thinking there are only two options and Krishna is given four options. So now in, if you go back to 2.49, Krishna said, Dureena Yavaram Karma Buddhi Yoga Dhananjaya Buddha Usharana Mandicha Rupana Fala Hetava. So he said, Dureena Yavaram Karma. Give the abominable work. Keep it far away. By Buddhi. Right? Take shelter of Buddhi. Rupana Fala Hetava. So this 49th verse, actually Krishna is condemning Karmakand as compared to Nishkam Karma. He is saying by Karmakand you continue on cycle of birth and death. And therefore give up Karmakand. That means among these four levels, Krishna is condemning the third so that Arjuna will take up the second. But for Arjuna, there are no four levels. There is just Jnana and remaining three are one level. So what he is thinking is that Krishna has condemned the lower level. So Buddhau Sharanam Anvichcha, he is saying. So he is thinking that means I should practice Jnana and renounce the world. And therefore he is thinking, why is Krishna going to fight? Now on top of that, if you look at the way Krishna is instructed by talking of the Siddha Pratyam. Can we close this? When he is talking about the Siddha Pratyam, he has used the word Shanti several times. When all he has used the word Shanti, he has used it in 70, 71. And before that, in 66. 70 was Sashanti Mapuoti Nakama Kami. And then Sashanti Madhigachati, 71. And 60 Ashantasya Kutaha Sukham. So he has used the word Shanti several times. At least three times he has used it. Now because of this use of the word Shanti, Arjuna is thinking that Krishna is telling that ultimately I have attained Shanti. Krishna is talking about internal Shanti, Arjuna is thinking about external Shanti. That's the difference. So Krishna, Arjuna gets further confused because Arjuna is confused by use of the word Shanti in 76, 70, 71. For Arjuna, Shanti is equal to external peace. That means no war. For Krishna, Shanti is equal to internal peace, which results from Nishkam Karma Yoga. That involves fighting. So the internal peace that Krishna has talked about is when actually one practices Nishkam Karma Yoga becomes free from kama, then one will become peaceful. So now, if we see, Krishna has told Arjuna that you should fight. When was the last time that Krishna told Arjuna to fight? Directly, that was in 2.37 and 38. He says, Hato va prapsyasi jitva va bhokshyasi. The first time he said, you should fight. The smart utishta kaunti yuddhaya nischaya. And again in 38 he said, sukhe dukhe samabhutva labha labho jaya. To yuddhaya yusa naivam papam aapsyasi. 37 and 38, Krishna clearly told Arjuna, you should fight. Now after that, explicitly Krishna has not repeated the instruction to fight. But in 47 he said, karmanne vadhikaras, we have right to do karma. And for Arjuna the karma is fighting. So Krishna has not withdrawn the instruction to fight, which he had given. So as far whatever Krishna has said, you should fight. But then afterwards Krishna has said several things. Durena yavaram karma. Give up abominable work. Arjuna said, abominable work, killing my own guru, killing my own teacher, abominable. I have to give it up. And then further Krishna has used very lofty levels of consciousness, he has talked about. And while that he has used, while talking about them, he has used word like shanti. So this has confused Arjuna. So essentially, Arjuna is confused because he is not able to reconcile the idea of action as a means to detachment. He is thinking, if I have to become detached, if I have to become renounced, I have to become inactive. So he is thinking that, okay, if I have to develop buddhi, I have to develop jnana, I have to attain shanti, I have to become a sitta pragya. If you see, in the sitta pragya section, we read all the verses today morning, yesterday, there is no mention of fighting. So in Arjuna's mind, the background was, okay, he's just sitta pragya person, fight or not. So Arjuna does not get an explicit answer to that question, but Arjuna gets the idea that the person is very shant. So therefore he says, so you told me to fight, but then you have described a person who gives up bad work and who is very peaceful. So I'm confused, what should I do? So then Krishna will answer Arjuna's question. Now here we see something interesting before we go to the next verses. Srila Prabhupada in the purport of 2.72 explains that Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls this as the contents of the Gita summarized. Then he says, in the Bhagavad Gita, subject matters are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. The three paths are there. We know that where the first six chapters talk about Karma Yoga. Isn't it? The last six chapters talk about? Middle six chapters? Bhakti Yoga. Wrong. Yeah, you remember that. All chapters talk about Bhakti Yoga. The first six chapters are about how Karma Yoga leads to Bhakti. The last six chapters are about how Jnana leads to Bhakti. The essential message of the Bhagavad Gita is Bhakti. Maybe when we get time, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, we will look at all the verses that are talking about Bhakti throughout all the chapters. I will mention them when we are going through the verses also, but maybe we will do a recap at the end if time permits. But all the chapters are talking about Bhakti. But Bhakti is emphasized in the middle six chapters. Whereas, Bhakti is described as the goal of the other paths in the remaining six chapters. In the remaining six chapters before, six chapters afterwards. So, Srila Prabhupada is telling a very interesting view. In the second chapter, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been discussed. And a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has also been given. Now, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's purpose, Srila Prabhupada is not giving us a glimpse. Srila Prabhupada is giving us the complete process of Bhakti Yoga. He's in Savaimana, Krishna Pada, Ravinda Yoga. He's talking about Ambarish Maharaj. Constantly it's in the mind of Krishna, Vachamsi, he's speaking about Krishna and his Padav Hare Kshetra Padam Sarpane, he's going to the holy place by using his feet. So, Srila Prabhupada is aware of what is happening in the Bhagavad Gita and still he is intentionally choosing to actually give the conclusion to it. So, some people criticize because Prabhupada is a bhakta, so he's just giving everywhere bhakti. He doesn't understand the subtlety of the Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada understands the subtlety of the Bhagavad Gita, but he also understands the necessity of the audience. The necessity of the audience is that they need a clear message. You see, after most of us have gotten bhakti for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, now slowly we will start understanding the subtlety of the flow of the Gita's message. And then understand for this level, that level, that level, and then we'll progress. But Srila Prabhupada is writing a book for people who are entirely new. And for them, first of all, understand I am not the body and the soul, that takes a long time to say. What to speak of the difference between Nishkam Karma Yoga and Sakam Karma Yoga, or something like that. So Srila Prabhupada drops hints of the subtle differences also. But he focuses on the conclusion. What people have to practice. But Srila Prabhupada is not naive in the sense that Prabhupada doesn't know about the flow of the Gita, or Prabhupada doesn't care about the flow of the Gita, he's just giving Bhagavad Gita, he's just giving Bhakti Bhakti away. Prabhupada is aware. If you look at the purport several places, we'll find Prabhupada will drop these hints. Actually, this chapter only has been discussed. So, a hint, now where is the hint being given? In 2.61, mentioned. That was the place where the first hint of Bhakti was given. Yukta Asita mat paraha. So now moving forward to our third chapter, Arjuna's question is, should I fight or should I not fight? So now Krishna, if you look at these four alternatives which Krishna has given, so again repeating the flow of the Gita in third chapter, so among these four levels, what Krishna wants Arjuna to do is to practice Nishkam Karma. So it's the flow will be like a spiral. So spiral means he will start by telling, okay, for you, even Jnanayoga is higher if you practice Nishkam Karma Yoga. Then he says, no, actually, I'm a qualified Nishkam Karma Yoga also. Then Karma Kand, okay, but still, from the Karma Kand, you will come to Nishkam Karma Yoga. Then somebody says, no, I'm qualified for Jnanayoga also, fine. But even qualified for Jnanayoga, come down for the sake of Loka Sangraha, for the sake of setting an example for others, for the reference, and practice Karma Yoga. So in that sense, it's like a spiral which goes up and comes down. So let's start with the answer of Arjuna. So the answer to Arjuna's question by Krishna. Any questions till now? Let's move forward. Sri Bhagavan Vacha.
Sri Bhagavan Vacha.
Lokesmin Vidha Nishta.
Lokesmin Vidha Nishta.
Pura Prokta Mayanagha.
Pura Prokta Mayanagha.
Yogena Sankhyanam.
Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam.
Karma Yogena Yoginam.
Karma Yogena Yoginam.
So, Dvividha, two. Nishtha. Nishtha is, normally it means faith. So, here, the word faith means actually, here in this context it means level. Because according to our faith, our level of practice will be different. They say actually Arjuna had talked about two levels. And it is not that I have talked about it, Pura Prokta. Actually, these levels have been talked about for a long time, and I have also talked about earlier. Maya Anaga. What are these two levels? Jnana Yogena Sankhyana Karma Yogena Yogina. So I have talked about these two paths. The path of Jnana, that is level one, and then path of Karma. Yogina, what yoga indicates that it is not Karma Kanda, it is Karma Yoga. So now Krishna has talked about this in 2.39 is a very important transitory verse. Yes, Arjuna has spoken this theoretical Luna Ishate Vita Sanki Buddhi Yoga to Imam Shun. So the same words are here. If you see in this verse, okay, how can we see both? Okay. So in this verse also, the word Sankhya is there and Yoga is there, as it is there over here. Lokesmin Vividhanishta. I have talked about two levels. What are those two levels? Jnana Yogena Sankhyana and Karma Yogena Yogina. So here Krishna is telling Arjuna, Sankhi. I have spoken about Sankhya till now to you. Now, Buddhi Yoga to Imam Shiva. I will speak about Buddhi Yoga. So I have talked about these two levels. So I will explain these two levels. So now Krishna has talked about Sankhya in terms of 2.11 to 30. It's an analysis how you are not the body of the soul. And interestingly, when Krishna has talked about you are not the body of the soul, not once has he implied that to realize that you are the soul, you have to renounce the world and go to Jnana. So Arjuna has this conception, Sankhya or Jnana means I have to renounce the world. But Krishna has not talked about that. Krishna has not talked about Jnana or Sankhya in terms of understanding that one is not the body. And then Krishna has said, okay, how should one act at the level of Sankhya? That is by yoga. And that is by doing Nishkam Karma Yoga. So these two levels which Krishna has talked about, he will elaborate now. Okay. कर्मणा मनारम्भान् नैष्कर्म्यं पुरुषोऽस्नुते नच संन्यसनादेव सिद्धिं समधिगच्छति। Okay, are karma yoga and buddhi yoga the same? Who would like to answer? I'll answer. What is the nature of buddhi yoga as a term? It's a?
Yes.
Buddhi yoga is a stretchable term. There is no specific path called buddhi yoga. That means the yoga which uses buddhi. So buddhi yoga can refer to karma yoga. Buddhi yoga can also refer to bhakti yoga. If the buddhi is developed to understand Bhagavan. So because Krishna has not talked about himself till now, so in this context, buddhi yoga refers to karma yoga. So Krishna is now freeing Arjuna from his misconception about jnana. So what does jnana mean? What does knowledge mean? He says, actually, it is not just by anarambha. Arambha means to begin. Anarambha means not begin. That means, it is not just by not doing activity that you will become free from sinful reactions. Naishkaramya is the state of freedom from sinful reactions. It is not just by not doing activity you become free from sinful reactions. And nachasanyasana deva, or just by taking sannyas, siddhim samadhi gacchati. It is not just by taking sannyas that you will attain siddhi. So the idea is that among these four levels, the level of jnana yoga, it is not that just by taking to that path one becomes perfect. It is not just by renouncing activity that one becomes perfect. That is the point which Krishna emphasizes. So there has to be a certain development of consciousness. If the consciousness is not developed sufficiently, if one is not purified internally, one is not detached adequately, then just accepting the external ashram will not help. Now Krishna will describe this. So Prabhupada quote this verse. Dandagrahana matrena naro narayana bhavet. We will quote it. He paraphrases. What is that? Dandagrahana matrena. Just take a danda. What will happen by that? Naro narayana bhavet. So our philosophy is take the danda and beat the person who claims in Narayana. So Prabhupada would say that we will make the Vedantis Vedantists. Vedantis means we'll smash their teeth. So Prabhupada quotes over here. Without purification of heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. Simply a disturbance. Many times, especially, now it may not be happening so much, but when the traditional culture was there in India, in 10, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, still it is there in the villages and the not so much westernized places. Actually, people have a traditional respect for enunciates. And there are many people who exploit that respect so that they can get the needs of their life taken care of without having to work hard. And nowadays there are also many gurus who exploit the people's faith. If they just have, they are glib talkers. Glib talkers means talk in a way in which people get impressed. Then they can attract a lot of followers. So somehow, when people come, it comes to spiritual realm, people go just by feelings. People go just by feelings. No, I went to this particular teacher and I heard his voice and it seemed so sweet. I felt so good. And then Prabhupada, again and again, the Bhagavatam talks about it. In the idea that the guru touched the disciple, felt electric current going through his body and disciple becomes energized and the guru becomes de-energized. He says, where is the Shastra precedent for this actually? So people in the spiritual realm practically go entirely by feelings. Feelings are important, but they are not all important. Scripture is there, philosophy is there, logic is there. So because people go so much by feelings, Prabhupada emphasizes philosophy also. And discriminate what is right, what is wrong. So to some extent, there are people who take up this profession of becoming a guru so that they can make not just money, but they can make a lot of followers. But such people simply pose a disturbance to the social order. Mm-hmm. to some extent within ISKCON also, some people join. Of course, we cannot have a broad generalization, but in places like Mayapur or that area, many times for the local people over there, their life is quite poor, and joining ISKCON seems to offer better material prospects. At least you have a sure regular food is there, but opulent food is also there. And then many of these Bengalis, they also have very good singing abilities. They are good at music, they are good at singing. So unfortunately, they come to ISKCON, and even if initially some of them come with sincere motives, over a period of time, generally speaking, for a person who has not been exposed to Western culture, then he gets exposed to Western culture within ISKCON. Then what happens is, that seems more attractive than the devotional culture. Because the devotional culture is something what one has already experienced. So many times these boys, they come and sing kirtans, and then they get attracted to some Western Mataji devotee, and then they think that, okay, then they have some relationship, they get married, and this person goes abroad, and then abroad he doesn't have education, so he can't get a proper job. But the same person who was doing kirtans for Radha Madhav, he goes to America and becomes a car cleaner in America. Oh, that becomes very unfortunate. Sometimes the people come with good intentions, but they get misled. Others, they come with the intention only that through ISKCON I will go abroad. Through ISKCON I will go abroad. I will have a foreign chance. So these are very material motives for people to come to ISKCON. And that's why now in Brahmacharya ashrams all over India, see actually Brahmacharyas are being, Brahmacharya ashram is strong in India, to some extent in Russia. In America and Europe there is not, this on the formative stage right now. So wherever there are high standards of practice, strong, strict sadhana is there, and satisfying opportunities for service are there, then the other temptations don't come up. So if people want to be lazy, then the strict sadhana, you actually have to work harder here than elsewhere. It becomes like that. So when we have strict, when we have strict sadhana, then those people who want to be lazy are sidelined by that. And people have satisfying service opportunities. Satisfying not in a, it's an egoistic sense, but even in a devotional sense, spiritual sense. Yes, I have challenging service, and I do those services, and I get reciprocation from senior devotees. When we get a sense of success within devotional service, then all the material temptations that might come, we can push them aside. So that's why it's not just an act of joining Brahmacharya ashram. Actually, one has to have the proper intention, one has to have proper environment, one has to have the proper engagement. Three things are required. The proper intention, proper environment, proper engagement. So, when all three are there, then the sannyas will actually lead to purification of the heart. In the term, sannyas lead to purification. First is proper intention. I come here to become purified. Then there is proper environment. That means there is a devotional culture where my anartha starts going down and my devotional power, devotional service attitude starts coming up. And along with that, in one sense, the engagement is like the link between the intention and the environment. This is a simple analysis. There are many subtleties to this, but broadly, we need to have all these three to advance in the renounced order. Of course, in one sense, this also can apply to Grihastha Ashram also. But in Grihastha Ashram, people can't change their environment much. They are living, they can change maybe their home environment. How much can they change the job environment? How can the jobs change the environment in their relatives and their colleagues? They can't do that much. So, How does, for example, when Ramanand Maharaj came here, at that time the Ramanand said in one lecture that the rats in the ashram were more civilized than the brahmacharis at that time. So what did he do? And slowly he started creating high standards. High standards means it is the environment. Okay. Those who want to stay here, they have to come for the morning program and this and that. And then gradually what happened, when the high standards are there, that means the environment is devotional conducive, that attracts people with devotional intentions. You need to understand that if I come here, I will have to practice these standards. And then when those devotees are also doing proper engagements. So if you see, for the almost till 96-97, Raghav Maharaj will focus so much on direct preaching, not from the distribution. It's focusing on devotee cultivation. Brahmachari class, Brahmachari Ashram solidification, formation solidification. And in 1 year, the distribution was done and it was such a big distribution. And in general, within ISKCON, the primary Brahmachari engagements are book distribution and fundraising for temple construction. The primary engagement for Brahmacharis. Some Brahmacharis may do some cooking, but preaching as a Brahmachari engagement is not such a common thing. It is slowly becoming common. And it takes time. It takes time for the culture to percolate, and it is gradually happening. So, we will have a lot of other services also. We will have management services, we will have counseling services. We need menial services also, we need managerial services also. But along with that, we need some brahminical services also. So when we have the intention, the environment, and the engagement, then the renounced order becomes a very, very conducive platform for rapid purification. When any of these are lacking, it creates a problem. And the greatest lacking is the intention. The intention is there, from the intention other things can be created. Now, in various temples all around the world, there are devotees who are sincere. And if they are sincere, they just go on practicing year after year after year. In the temple president may change, and this management may change, that problem may be there. They are just devotedly practicing. So if the intention is there, one can go on lifelong. But one requires a lot of determination. If along, and even when there is a lot of determination, just by intention alone, one may not be able to bring about a lot of transformation. One can go on oneself. But when the intention is along with that, a good environment is provided. And then productive engagement is there. Satisfying engagement. Then, tremendous effect. Tremendous effect. In terms of not only how the Brahmachari Ashram grows, how the devotees of the Brahmachari Ashram advance, but also in terms of how the Brahmachari Ashram becomes like a center for the whole community. And the Brahmacharis can inspire the congregation, and the Brahmacharis can actually spread preaching in a geometric progression, where exponentially the preaching can be spread. So, to some extent, all of us are very fortunate that we are in a situation where we have these, and that's how we can advance steadily. Any questions? Yes. Yeah. So, yesterday there was this question about, I mentioned that reinitiation is not the Shastric standard. So actually, the idea is that reinitiation is not necessary if a person has been initiated by a Vaishnava. The person feels that, okay, I'm not getting guidance from that Vaishnava, so they can take guidance from somebody else. That is fine. But there is no need per se for reinitiation. If somebody feels the need, then can take reinitiation. So in the past, there have been devotees who have taken reinitiation, that is fine. But in the future, it's not, as of now, this reinitiation is not essential. Those who want, they can take shelter. And it's not something which is mandatory, and it is not something which has Shastric precedence. So therefore, it's not recommended. But if somebody feels the need, they can take shelter of some other teacher. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, please. What are the other warriors fighting for? They are fighting the Swarga. They are the Karma Kanda level. Mm-hmm. The warriors who fight valiantly on the battlefield without turning their backs, and they lay down their lives, they go to Swarga. So they are at the Karma Kanda. But Arjuna wants Krishna to Krishna wants Arjuna to rise to higher level. Mm-hmm. nahi kaschit kshanam api jatutishtatya karma kre karyate yavasha karma sarva prakriti jayagunai kshanam api, even for a moment jato tishtati akarma, tishtati means to be situated. Certainly jato, one cannot be situated without doing activity even for a moment, not to speak for a lifetime. That's the emphasis of it. Even for a moment one cannot be inactive. Karyateya avashaha, helplessly one is forced to act. And sarva prakriti jayagunai. Now, this is a very strong verse which seems to say that inaction is impossible. So the Mayavadi says, as long as you are influenced by the modes, inaction is impossible. But the more you go beyond the modes, the more you can become inactive. Because you understand, action is a part of illusion. You go beyond illusion. So Prabhupada addresses that itself in the purport in the first line. He says, it is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. So the example for this is, suppose somebody is having a running competition. Normally people can run quite fast, but if somebody is participating in a sack race, all of you know what a sack race? People have to put their legs in a sack and then they have to run. Now with a sack, how fast can people run? Not very fast, isn't it? So the sack actually constrains the person from running. So similarly, the body is like a sack for the soul. And the body burdens the soul. Now even with the burden of the body, the soul is so active. So when the burden is removed, how much more the soul will be active? Isn't it? And then Prabhupada is saying, it is not a question of embodied life, it is the nature of the soul to be always active. So yes, it is true that the activities at the body level are caused by the modes. That is true certainly. And that's why they are mundane, they are illusory, they are entangling, they are destructive. But still the energy for action is not coming from the modes. The energy for action, the consciousness through which the action is being initiated, that is coming from the soul. The consciousness and the energy are the connection of the soul. And it's like the soul in the pure state will not just be active, but superactive. Superactive for Krishna's service. And that's why we have the Brahma Samhita saying that people don't walk in the spiritual world. What do they do? Dance. Katha, gana, natyam, gamanam, api, amishipriya. It's not that people in the spiritual world are in the Maunga Vrata. No, they are singing and dancing. So there is activity. And there is not just activity, there is joyful activity. And Srila Prabhupada, in one sense, he is actually telling when one can renounce. So, Krishna is actually telling us, don't renounce. That is true. The Prabhupada is giving us a conclusion. If one is practicing bhakti, then one can renounce. And he quotes this famous verse from the Bhagavatam first canto, Narada Muni's teachings. And Narada Muni is telling to Vyasadeva that even if somebody renounces because of some sentiment and after renouncing falls back away, still, if he has renounced for the sake of bhakti, then whatever he has achieved will be his tangible gain. And to some extent, that is happening in our community. In the early days, when we did not have a proper community, when somebody takes a renounced order and then he finds that I cannot maintain it, then that person just has to return back to completely materialistic life. Because there is no sort of community outside to absorb such a person. So for the renounced order, actually the renounced order is like walking on a tightrope. And the community around is like the safety net. So if a person cannot continue the renounced order, then there is the facility for the person to be absorbed in the community. And many of the devotees who were in the renounced order earlier, they practiced diligently in the renounced order, but somehow they couldn't continue. If they go into the community of others, that they go to congregation, they often become exemplary congregation devotees. But they are well dedicated, have a lot of preaching is seen, and they become exemplary in their own ways. So that's why, even from a practical point of view, if somebody takes a renounced order and can't continue, there is no loss. What loss is there in it? So, of course, one should not generally take a renounced order just to try it out. Let me try it out, how it works. No, when one takes a renounced order, one should have a serious intention that I want to do this lifelong. I want to do this lifelong. The trying out happened in the VTA. 1 year I am trying it out to see. But when the action becomes necessary, that should be the serious intention. But still, if somehow one is not able to continue, it will go over the mission. Jayadutt Maharaj gave a series of lectures called Hopes and Horrors of Householder Life. So he says that he says out of 12 Mahajanas, 7 are Grihasthas. That is the hope of householder life, and the hope ends here. And now let us start with horror. So one of the points he makes over there is that he said that you should, even if you can't be a lifelong brahmachari, be a brahmachari for 1 year. You can't be a brahmachari for 1 year, be for 6 months. You can't be for 6 months, be for 1 month. Be for one day. He said that one day will be the happiest day of your life when you look back afterwards. What loss will be there for you? Because whatever devotional credits we have achieved, that is good for us. And if one doesn't practice bhakti, what is the gain by just doing karma kanda? So, Srila Prabhupada is giving us the bhakti understanding of this. But from the point of view of, so now this is bhakti is the fifth level, which Krishna has not yet explicitly talked about. But Prabhupada is talking about the fifth level. So if one is renouncing the world for the sake of practicing bhakti, then there is no loss. But if one renounces the world for the sake of practicing jnana, then that may backfire. One may fall back and that may lead to trouble for a person. So, karma indriyani sanyamya. Yasate manasa smaran. Indriyathani mudhatma. Vithyachara sauchyate. Karmendriyani sanyamya. So one is controlling the senses, but is not controlling the mind. So the morning I am talking about the sense control, but no mind control. So ya asati manasa asmara. There is no control in the mind. One is contemplating on sense objects, but one is not engaging physically in sense gratification. So this, he says, what is this? Mithyachara. This is hypocrisy. And one is, why Krishna is talking about two things over here. He is fooling the world and he is fooling himself also. He is vimudhatma and mithyachara. He is fooling the world because the world is thinking that this person is a great renunciate. But he is fooling, he is thinking, oh, I am getting the prestige of a renunciate without actually being renounced. But he is even getting the prestige, but he is not getting the spiritual advancement. He is not getting the spiritual advancement. That's why he is vimudhatma. So, in one lecture, Radhanath Maharaj gives a very, very nice understanding of what is hypocrisy. Vimudhatma. He says, this is a paraphrase, the essential. Hypocrisy means to accept the position and privileges, accept the prestige and privileges of a position without accepting its sacrifices and services. Services and sacrifices. That means there's a position. There's a position of a brahmachari or sannyasi. And that position gives a certain prestige and certain privileges. So the prestige is okay. Later in the future, somebody becomes after me, that person will respect in the devotee community. Somebody in the future becomes a sannyasi, gets a lot of respect. And along with the prestige comes privileges. One of the biggest privileges is that you don't have to go out and struggle for earning a livelihood. It's taken care of us. So there's so much prestige and privileges that we get. But along with that, we're expected to have sacrifice. Basic sacrifices that you give up sense gratification at a gross level. Along with that, there are some services that we are expected to do. So if one just accepts the prestige and privilege, but doesn't do the sacrifice and the service, then that is hypocrisy. So that means to the world we are showing as I am a renunciate, but internally I am acting like an attached person. So now Krishna is telling Arjuna, Arjuna, this is what will happen to you if you renounce that. And such a person will make no more spiritual advancement. A person will simply delude himself. Vyasate manasa asmaran. Now in the purport, Srila Prabhupada takes it at a different level. He doesn't talk about the Jnani renunciates, he talks about the Bhajanandis. He says that sometimes they refuse to work in Krishna consciousness but make a show of meditation. And then he also talks about such people, and they also speak on dry philosophy to bluff sophisticated followers. But they are greatest cheaters. And he says, he who makes a show of being a yogi while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification must be called the greatest cheater. Even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy, greatest cheater, probably very strong over here. And he says that in Bhagavad Gita, he says, illicit sex in the renounced order is the greatest perversity in society, he says. Illicit sex is bad, but illicit sex in the renounced order is the greatest perversity in society. And that is quite unfortunate. So now, what is hypocrisy and what is not hypocrisy? See, having material desires is not hypocrisy. We become brahmachari, we become Hindu and become Muslims, we have material desires. It is not that just by changing the color of the dress, that the color of the desires also automatically changes. It doesn't happen like that. So naturally, we will have material desires. But the point is, yasate manasa asmarana. One is cultivating those desires, one is contemplating on those desires, one is planning whether I can execute them, whether I can implement them, whether I can indulgence and gratitude. That is what is common. That is what is common. So if one is striving to give it up, then that is not hypocrisy. In one sense, bhakti always involves this conflict between the ideal and the practical. So I am at this level, but I aspire for that level. So now, I do have to struggle to act at the ideal level. Sometimes we may dancing in kirtan, we don't feel like dancing. Trying to chant clearly and attentively, although we don't feel like chanting. That is not hypocrisy. See, what makes an action hypocritical is the intention behind it. If the intention is to create a facade, then it is hypocrisy. But if the intention is to beg to Krishna, Krishna, please give me this consciousness. So then, yes, I am not feeling like chanting, but still I chant attentively. Not so that people think I am advanced, but Krishna, please give me the taste. Then it is not hypocrisy. Therefore, when we see this verses, at one level we should certainly be alerted, but we don't have to be alarmed. So, be alerted, but not alarmed. What is the difference between alerted and alarmed? Alerted means I understand there is danger. I have to be careful. But alarmed means I become frightened. I am not frightened. I mean, not like that. Be alerted but not alarmed. Hypocrisy is something like this. And there is an intention to cheat. Not when there is an intention to cultivate. To cheat means to pretend to the world that I am very advanced, I am very detached, I am very renounced. To cheat. If there is intention to cheat, that is hypocrisy. But if there is intention to cultivate, I don't have this, but by acting in this way, I will be cultivating it. Then that is not hypocrisy. Now, we'll try to complete this section till 8. Two more verses. Yastva indriyani manasa. Niyamyaramate
Arjuna.
Karmendriyai karma yogam. Asatta sa vishishyate. So Krishna is comparing. The person renounced is a hypocrite, but a person is a householder, he's saying, if he is karmendriyani karma yoga, He says, with his karma in the earth, he has come in. He is better. So in the context of Arjuna, he is recommending to Arjuna that karma yoga is better than jnana yoga. So directly, this verse is not talking about bhakti yoga. And therefore, this verse cannot be applied to grahastha ashram versus brahmacharya ashram context. Sometimes, this verse seems to be interpreted that. And actually, Krishna is saying that grahastha ashram is better. It's not like that. The whole dynamics is, we can learn some principles from here, which we can apply in our life. But what Krishna is saying over here is, if you remember those four levels, the conflict between jnana yoga and karma yoga. So Krishna is saying, Arjuna, don't practice jnana yoga because you become hypocritical. And the person who is practicing karma yoga is better. Now, actually speaking, what we are discussing right now in bhakti yoga, there are two divisions. There are two paths within the path of bhakti yoga, grahastha ashram and brahmacharya ashram. This verse actually doesn't apply to that. So Prabhupada quotes over here that a sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of making a living. Purpose of meditation is just show what. And therefore here Krishna will conclude with an imperative statement over here. Niyatam kuru karmatvam.
Niyatam kuru karmatvam.
Karma jayoya karmana.
Karma jayoya karmana.
Sharira yatra pichate.
Sharira yatra pichate.
Prasiddhyeda karmana.
Prasiddhyeda karmana.
Kuru. Kuru means do. Or therefore Arjuna, do your karma. Which karma? Niyata karma. That is fight. Kshatriya fight. So now Arjuna is not, Krishna is using the direct language fight. He is talking more in universal or conceptual or philosophical terms. Do your prescribed duty. And now he is giving another reason over here. All this is like a concluding statement. Earlier I said you will get purified by this. But the additional reason is, but actually, you will not be able to maintain yourself. Karma jayoya karma. Karma is better than a karma because sharira yatra pichate. So yatra is, we go for Vrindavan yatra. We go for various yatras. So sharira yatra means the soul is going on yatra in this body. So for the journey of the soul in the body to go on, the soul needs some body, basic body maintenance. And if one renounces action, he is not able to maintain his body also. So, sharira yatra na prasiddhye. It will not happen if one does not practice doing one's duty. So, Krishna has given basically here three reasons why one should do one's duty in this section. The first reasons. Three reasons why karma yoga is preferable to jnana yoga for Arjuna. So what are the three reasons? First he says is that avoid hypocrisy. Then he says, then maintain social order and then maintain your own body. So in this way he has recommended to Arjuna that you should not renounce the world but you should fight. So we'll continue with this discussion tomorrow where we'll discuss about the next section, which starts from 3.9 and 3.10 onward, which talks about how, if one can't practice karma yoga, then one can practice karma kanda. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Dai Gaura Premanande. Thank you very much.